The Sandusfield Players are presenting a production of Dylan Thomas's Under Milkwood. It features a cameo performance by our good friend Simon Winchester and a narration by Benjamin Watson. This is a rare opportunity to hear poetry and the humor of Dylan Thomas's wonderful creation Under Milkwood. The play spans one entire day and a dreaming night in the life of a small Welsh seaside town through a series of lyric adventures, each with its own cast of eccentric and sometimes bawdy characters. It was commissioned in 1953 by the BBC. It was finished only a month before Dylan Thomas's death at the age of 39. Benjamin Watson is the narrator and director of the show. In the 1970s and 80s, he was one of the most versatile and gifted operatic baritones, singing all over the world in almost every genre of music. And now he is with us in Studio A, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Benjamin Watson to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you here. So how did you come to this production of not only narrating, but directing and...
Well, it was actually accidental. It all happened 3 years ago now when Sandusfield, which is a small town in the southeast corner of the Berkshires, bordering on Connecticut,
right.
We had our 250th anniversary. And so at the Art Center, we thought we should do something to kind of celebrate, help celebrate this particular time. And so we devised a program which traced the history of Sandusfield from... the 18th century. And we devised a program making little sketches. We had a number of narrators. We built a set, like a shop front, where most things happened, you know, the porch of a shop,
right.
through the town's history. And I persuaded and bullied various friends and neighbors to take part. And we had a cast of about 20 with narrators and then doing little sketches. And so from there, to my surprise, people wanted more. And so a year later, I looked for a play where there were lots of characters. So I found Thornton Wilder's Our Town, which seemed to be a very nice follow-on, another small New England hill town.
Sure.
And so we did Our Town. And so now... the bug is well established. You know, everyone's well bitten. And so then I decided to move on in the same kind of vein.
Were you the narrator, by the way? Were you the narrator?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, the stage manager?
I didn't intend to be, but we had our 83-year-old. It proved to be a little bit too much for him.
So you were the stage manager. Okay, great.
I kind of moved in. And then we now have a real community company. I must say that for most people, this is their second time. Our Town was their second time on stage. And Under Milkwood would be their third time on stage. But everyone is, you know, full of enthusiasm. And for me, the interesting thing is, you know, having not planned this at all, but I'm fascinated to see how far we can go, how much we can actually do. And so I chose Under Milkwood because, again, it's another small town. Again, I'm trying to keep the company running and involve 20 or more actors, right? And so Under Milkwood seemed to be perfect to fit that slot perfectly. Also, too, it's a play that's not done that much here.
No.
And it is, and also too, I wanted now to extend them into acting with their voices, because it's not this play was never written for the stage.
No, it's written for radio.
And so now, it's been a move forward, and everyone now has to really learn to act these rather eccentric characters vocally, to act with their voices.
So, as a director, how do you assist in that, of people using their instruments?
I have fun. We have a lot of fun. That's the main thing. I do a little bit of bullying.
Work?
I think everyone trusts me. Because so far what we've done works. And I'm very interested to see my group of totally inexperienced players there, by and large. I'm interested to see that they're not scared. They get up on the stage. They're not nervous. They're enjoying themselves. And I think that's because I give them a very clear pattern of what they need to do. I also believe fervently that we're all actors. Mm. We're all actors. We spend most of our life acting in some way or other. And so I say to them basically, well, how about having a change and stop acting yourself and act someone else? I mean, that'll be a little bit of a relief, you know, just to try and pretend to be these other people. And so I do truly believe that, you know, acting is not a big deal. Oh, that's a dangerous one, isn't it?
Well,
show that one out.
Is it? Were you always comfortable on stage when you were singing?
Yes, fortunately I was. And in my time, of course, there were no schools of acting as a singer moving into opera, which I never ever thought I would do. I had no training at all, and so one was just thrown on stage, and you pick things up. You learned. From experience, you learned as you went. And I found it fascinating. And I learned by watching and just gradually developing things. But I never had any real training in acting. And so I think to myself, I do believe, and it's the proof of the pudding is in the eating. I mean, we did a very nice production of Our Town.
Right.
And I think we'll do a very good job with Under Milkwood as well.
Do you feel, and this is maybe a sidebar question, but I'm now fascinated because you have you said what you said about actors. Do you find it that as doing opera, that it is solely the voice and is solely that you can get by solely by that, or does there have to be some degree of acting involved?
In opera?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Now, yes. Now, when I moved into the profession, okay, now we're talking back into the 60s.
Yes.
Right, I started in the profession in 1963. Okay, there was still a great, the main thrust was for the voice, okay, and acting, by and large, was secondary, you know. Well, you know, main thing is we want to hear the voice, and acting wasn't so important. Gradually, during my time, that changed, and I was one of those early actor-singers, if you want, mm-hmm. rather than a singer-actor. So my thrust came from acting. I loved it. And then, of course, there was a big movement, in my time, starting probably in the 70s, where the theater director started to move into opera.
Right.
And then everything changed, right? Because they didn't prepare, they didn't work in the same way as the old opera style, opera directors. And so, therefore, singers had to really pull themselves up, you know, by their bootlaces in order to keep up with very often the vague direction of the theater directors, right? Mm. There wasn't so much blocking and detailed work going on. You know, they expected, as they would do with actors, to improvise more. And so the acting has changed. And then with the advent of television, filming of opera as well, you can't get away with huge people just standing and singing or people being clumsy or awkward. And now I would maintain that opera, I mean, the standard of acting is pretty well up to theatrical, major theatrical standards as well. And that's really exciting for me because opera is singing and theater.
Mm.
It's not just singing.
Because I'm fascinated when you go often to see something on Broadway and you look at someone's credits that it may be a straight role that they're in, it may be a straight play that they're in, not even a musical, but they have this opera background.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's moving now. And also too, in my early days, the crossover didn't really exist. Now young singers and younger singers are really expected to be able to perform and sing all kinds of music. In my time, it was kind of taboo. You know, I sang folk music with my old partner, Bill Crowfoot, and my agent in Cami hated it. They really hated it. And they were frustrated with me for bothering to do that.
Why a Tanglewood regular you were.
Oh yes, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. And then your story is you had acute hearing loss and that sort of took you out of the game, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Was that gradual or did you realize it was having an effect?
It kind of was gradual, but no one, including myself, was able to anticipate what was happening. And then it hit hard and fast, and I lost my left ear one weekend. It just quietly vanished.
Wow.
And this ear, the right ear, was already under serious attack, and so I was in deep trouble. For a year, then, I had all kinds of steroid was the main treatment for what they thought, what they diagnosed, which was a rare autoimmune problem, which can hit the ears of the eyes. And so, for a year, I was totally out of it. And then I got my first hearing aid, and my tail was up, and I thought, God damn it, there's nothing wrong with my voice.
Yeah.
So I went back in on a reduced schedule, because now people were a little suspicious of what would be happening with me. And I managed that for about 2 years. And then I realized I was scared. I couldn't really hear. I didn't know what was happening around me. I didn't really know if I was singing in pitch or not. And so I called it quits. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no pleasure in this anymore. And I'd become totally isolated. So then my hearing kind of over the next 10 years or so was really just gradually going. Until I finally got a cochlear implant in my deaf ear about 5 years ago, 5 to 6 years ago. That is a miracle. That's all I can say. And that's enabled me to, in actual fact, come forward and to do what I'm now doing.
And ultimately, but still using, I mean, let's face it, your voice is amazing. So to use that voice.
Oh, yes. Yes. And I can, you know, and acting is, well, I mean, it's like singing. And particularly this Dylan Thomas.
Yes.
Is music. I mean, this man's exuberance and the way he throws words around is just so exuberant and also very beautiful.
You have two performances, right?
Yes, we have two performances.
Well, one on Saturday and one on Sunday.
One on Saturday and one on Sunday. The one on Saturday is pretty well selling out, and I think the one on Sunday is beginning to pick up.
Sunday afternoon.
Yes. I think another thing that I would say with what we're trying to do in Sandersfield is that we can put on productions, which we do ourselves. We have a beautiful little hall there, which is an old Baptist church, come synagogue, come art center. It's a lovely acoustic, but it holds about 130 people. Really, that's what we can do. But we have the advantage that we do everything ourselves. We make our own sets. We have everything. The only thing we really, our big expense is to hire costumes sometimes,
right,
which we do from Shakespeare and Company. But it means that we can put on these plays, hopefully, at a nice, really semi-professional level, and we don't charge. For instance, we don't have to charge what the professional companies who surround us, for instance, in the Berkshires. There's so many very fine professional companies.
The best, yeah.
But we can do that. And in December, we'll be doing Christmas Carol. We'll do our own version of Christmas Carol. But again, we will charge $15 for that for adults and $5 for children.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the production.
Yes.
Does that sound okay?
Yes, certainly.
Excellent. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back. We're joined in studio by Benjamin Watson, talking about Under Milkwood, the Sandersfield Players, which takes place this Saturday and Sunday, and we'll find out more when we return after this short break. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Benjamin Luxon is our guest. He is the narrator and director of the Sanisfield Players production of Dylan Thomas's Under Milkwood, which features a cameo performance by our dear friend Simon Winchester. He's a hoot, so that'll be fun.
Yes.
And so this is Saturday and Sunday at the Sanisfield Arts Center in Sanisfield, Massachusetts. And you can find out more by going to sanisfieldartcenter.org. You are going to read from a little bit, do a little bit from Under Milkwood.
Yes, okay. I'll read you a tiny... I could dip into this play almost anywhere, and out comes the most wonderful language.
Yes.
But I will just go from the beginning where he is introduced, and he's talking to the listeners and saying, "Only you can hear and see behind the eyes of the sleepers the movements and countries and mazes and colors and dismays and rainbows and tunes and wishes and flight and fall and despairs and big seas of their dreams. From where you are, you can hear their dreams. Captain Cat, the retired blind sea captain, asleep in his bunk in the sea-shelled ship-in-bottle ship-shaped best cabin of Schooner House, dreams of never such seas as any that swamped the decks of his SS Kidwelly, bellying over the bedclothes and jellyfish slippery, sucking him down salt-deep into the Davy Dark, where the fish come biting out and nibble him down to his wishbone, and the long-drowned nuzzle up to him. Remember me, Captain. I'm Jonah Jarvis." All right, and so it goes on. Can I give you one more bit?
Yes, please do.
Okay, and then it moves on to the shopkeepers, Miss Price, Miss Mafanry Price, and Mr. Mark Edwards, who both keep shop. She keeps a sweet shop. He is a haberdasher, tailor, and what? And he keeps the Emporium on the hill, mm-hmm. right? They are madly in love, and they will never, ever get together. They write passionate letters to each other. "From where you are, you can hear in Cockle Row in the spring moonless night, Miss Price, dressmaker and sweet shopkeeper, dream of her lover. Tall as the town clock tower, Samson syrup gold-maned, whacking thighed and piping hot, thunderbolt-based and barnacle-breasted, flailing up the cockles with his eyes like blow-lamps, and scooping low over her lonely, loving, hot water-bottled body. Mafanry Price, Mr. Mark Edwards, I am a draper mad with love."
What language?
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's anywhere. It's all the time. Beautiful, funny. It's an extraordinary piece of writing.
It really is. So, how do you for a cast like this? How does everyone come at it? I guess I'm curious because of the community quality of it. Everyone's schedule is different, I assume. So how do you corral all of those?
Well, it's very
cats
simple.
Into the Art Center.
It's very. We rehearse two evenings twice a week, on a Friday evening for 2 hours and on a Sunday afternoon for 2 hours. That's it. So our total rehearsal time has been 30 hours to prepare for this. Now, 30 hours is a five-day working week in a professional theater.
Right.
But it's very interesting. In the beginning, the first four rehearsals, they couldn't hear it. They couldn't really... The language is almost too much.
Right.
And then gradually, it began to come through. And I thought, oh, my God, what have I done here? Everyone's going to be bored out of their minds. But in actual fact, there's so much comedy in this play. It is very funny. Sharp. The wit is so sharp.
Because the timing is so incredible as well. I mean, you have to hit it.
Yes, that's right.
So,
and yeah. We have two narrators as well. I mean, there's another narrating voice. And then the company is basically playing all the characters, of which there are 54, something like that.
And it's staged. There's characters. I mean, it's not you're off book, right?
No, they're on book.
They're on book.
Because we're doing this as we would be, as we are now in this,
radio
in this little
play.
Studio.
Yeah.
We're trying to, and I've got microphones around, and it's as if we're doing a studio broadcast.
Oh, that's fun.
Right. Because that's that's, I think that's what was originally wanted with this play. It's the sound of it.
And hearing.
You know, and I will say to people, listen, if you're having difficulty with this language coming at you, shut your eyes. And if you get flummoxed by it, just close your eyes for a while and see what happens.
Well, that's funny you mentioned that, because when you were reading that second piece, I found myself shutting my eyes to key into the language.
Yeah.
Because you really don't want to miss anything because it's so beautiful.
I'm sorry?
Because you don't want to miss anything because it's so beautiful.
That's right. But, I mean, people will, because I've found I've known this play pretty well all my grown-up life, you know, something like 50 years I've lived with this play. I've actually done a performance, a stage performance of it. And in this time, working on it again, I suddenly thought, oh, my God, I've never heard that before. I picked up a number of things that I've not heard. So it's still kind of developing in a way for me after all this time.
And I love the idea of it being in a small, again, that small town. Yes, yeah. It's not here, it's Wales, but it's still a small town.
Yes, it is a small town.
There's a universality to that.
800 permanent residents, which swells to maybe twice that number at times of the year with second homeowners. Mm. So it is a small town. But... I sometimes think, what am I doing? I mean, I think of the kind of career I've had, and here I am doing this, and yet it's exciting.
Mm.
And it's extremely rewarding.
That's the best part.
Yes.
Well, the Stanisfield Players are presenting a production of Dylan Thomas's Under Milkwood. It is narrated and directed by Benjamin Luxon. It's Saturday at 8 and Sunday at 3, I believe, right? Sunday at 3.
That's right.
And this is all at the Stanisfield Arts Center in Stanisfield, Massachusetts. And you can find out more by going to stanisfieldartcenter.org. stanisfieldartcenter.org. Benjamin Luxon, what a great pleasure to have you on the program. A delight, and just so nice to meet you and to have you perform for us. What fun that was.
Thank you so much.
We can't wait to see the production. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you,
Great
Joe.
Pleasure. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.